fire and water are not separate. They're not separate entities with one merging into the other, although for convenience, it's often described that way. But truly in the body, the qi and the yin are indivisible. They're always circulating together.
I'm Michael Max, and this is Qiological. I've long thought of clinic as a sacred space, as a place where people are invited to bring all of themselves. And it's also a moment and a place where we as practitioners, we can bring ourselves, our attention, and not infrequently learn something about ourselves that was previously hidden or only dimly perceived. But lately, I found clinic to be a refuge, a place removed from the 10,000 turmoils of the world, a place where regardless of belief, stance, politics, religion, or whatever ist or ism we use to craft our identity, there's an opportunity to meet as human beings. It is a rare moment in the world at this time that we have the opportunity to shed the badges and constrictions of identity, allow ourselves to be seen beyond our stories, and allow another to show us something of themself and ourself that we either didn't want to look at or didn't even know was there. Clinic can be a place where the world softens, we soften, allow for an expansive sense of being that's always there, but often overlooked. It allows for an exchange that not only brings healing to individuals, but through their relationships, creates a little more coherence and connection in the world at large. Taking refuge is an opportunity for a moment to let go of everything we've held that's gotten us to this moment, but perhaps is not so useful for taking us into the next moment. It is an opportunity to be and see who we are in the presence of another who can, without judgment, witness the troubles, contradictions, delusions, and hopeful stories that we use to cobble our lives together, and to witness with empathy and a discerning eye and heart that allows for seeing how what's right about us can care for and heal what's broken about us. It is a rare moment when us humans allow life to simply be as it is without the struggle of grasping or rejecting. And in those moments, when we let ourselves and others off the hook and use our judgment to discern in service of helping instead of controlling, in those moments when the agendas fall away, we have an opportunity to meet and for our world to have a little more connection, understanding, and compassion. In a moment, we're going to get into an exploration of women's health through the lens of the five phases and six Jing, as is discussed in what is popularly known as the Tanya Jing. The Tanya Jing is a lost text on herbal medicine that has been alluded to in various texts and traditions. And while the text itself seems to be more myth than manifest, the principles and perspectives associated with it give us another perspective to consider physiology, pathology, and well-being. We're going to get into all of this with Genevieve Legoff in just a moment. These conversations come to you through the generous support of our sponsors and members. All the sponsors here provide helpful products or services that you'll find beneficial in your clinical work. Worried that an EMR is too complex for you? Jane has friendly and knowledgeable support. Mayway Herbs is celebrating the 55th year of their family business. You're invited to make use of their vast library of resources. Are you concerned about the health of Mother Earth? AccuFast Needles is doing something about that. You can too. And later in the show, Ancestral Sturman offers up a sinew treatment, and the folks at Blue Poppy have something special to share as well. Do be sure to visit the sponsors page on the Qiological website to take advantage of all the special offers our terrific sponsors have for listeners of the podcast.
Hi folks, I'm Yvonne Lau, president of Mayway Herbs. Our family business turns 55 this year, and we wouldn't have gotten this far without the love and support of our community. We're truly grateful and promise you that we'll continue to work hard to support you and your practice. Please visit Mayway.com to find the perfect Pumsar brand formula or formulate your own in our dispensary. Our site also has lots of articles, videos, and herbal recipes for you to explore. And tune into our podcast, Chinese Medicine Matters, for insightful discussions on all things TCM. Learn about treatment strategies and powerful herbal remedies. As we welcome the month of May, our focus is on women's health. Our newsletter articles and podcast episodes this month will highlight different aspects and unique challenges women face, so subscribe or tune in. And if you're a practitioner, get a discount on our women's health formulas this month. Just visit Meiwei.com. This season and every season, trust Meiwei Herbs for your health and wellness needs. And thank you for supporting Real Chinese Medicine.
I love how technology can help to automate my office, and I want to share with you my favorite tool for doing so, Jane. Jane is a clinic management software in EMR with a human touch. Whether you're switching your software or going paperless for the first time, the Jane team knows that the onboarding process can feel a little overwhelming. That's why with Jane, you don't just get software, you get a whole team. Included in every Jane subscription is their award-winning customer support available by phone, email, and chat whenever you need it, even Saturdays. You can also book a free account setup consultation to review your account and ensure you feel confident about going live. If you're interested in making the switch to Jane, head to jane.app/switch to book a one-on-one demo with a member of their support team. And be sure to mention the code CHEOLOGICAL at the time of sign up for a 1 month grace period on your new Jane account. I don't know about you, but sometimes I take a step back and marvel at my acupuncture needles. I mean, they're the world's simplest medical tool, a sharpened wire and a handle. That's it. And with this simple tool, hundreds of health conditions can be resolved. I love it. What I didn't love was the amount of packaging waste I generated at the end of the day. But that has now changed too. Ever since I switched to AccuFast Earth-Friendly Needles, I reduced my packaging waste by 90%. Not only are they a great needle, but the folks at AccuFast plant a tree for every two boxes of needles I use in the clinic. By switching to AccuFast Needles, you'll be helping patients, planting trees, and joining a community of practitioners changing the world. Like our simple needle, being a part of the solution, it's simple too. Visit AccuFastNeedles.com/CHEOLOGICAL to learn how.
You know, the transformation to the five phases is not the same as the dynamics of the six Qing. And as you'll hear in this conversation, it can be a bit confusing at first. But once you start to see it, you can't unsee it. And it will help widen your clinical perspective. Let's get into this conversation with Genevieve Lakoff. Genevieve Lakoff, welcome to CHEOLOGICAL.
Thank you so much for having me, Michael. I'm really happy to be here and to get to meet you and be in conversation with you.
I'm happy to have you as well. One of the things that really got my attention when I first started studying Chinese medicine was how it treats women's health. I mean, what a treasure it is for women's health. And at first I thought, what's with all this asking about periods and why are they spending so much time on women's health with every woman? And of course, all you've got to do is study for a month or two and you realize that it's a treasure house.
Yes, it is. I think it's one of the great strengths of Chinese medicine. There's certain things that Western medicine is superior at, and there are things that Chinese medicine is superior at. And I definitely think in terms of women's health, it offers possibilities that are not present at all in Western medicine.
Yes, that's a great way to say it. Possibilities that are not present at all, which is why sometimes people come to us and they leave and they go, that was a miracle.
Yes, that's true.
They didn't even know it was possible.
I mean, even with something as simple as painful periods, which women suffer from, you know, and they go to their Western practitioner and they're told, well, this is just a normal variation. Good luck to you. And, you know, that Chinese medicine can make a huge difference in these people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is why we're here to talk today.
Yes.
Chinese medicine, women's health. We're going to touch a bit on the Tanya Jing because it's something sounds like you've dipped your toes into.
Yeah. So my whole self, in fact.
You baptized your whole self into it.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I apprenticed in a Shanghan Zabing lineage. And so because of the relationship between the two texts, I really find that the study of the of what we think might be the lost Tong Yijing, aka the Fuxing Jue, really helps to inform how we can understand the Shanghan Zabinglin.
It's a really curious thing. I've done a little study myself in the Shanghan Lin, just a little, you know, like just enough to know that, my God, I could spend a whole lifetime doing this and,
you know, yes,
it would be endless. So the Tong Yijing, it's, I've got a lot of curiosities about this. I'm not a historian. I'm mainly, a practitioner.
Neither am I.
Yeah. So like, what's your sense of where this comes from? In some ways that doesn't even matter, but I'd still like to get your sense. More importantly, I want to get into how this fits in with how we could practice here in our modern age, or maybe how we use it to help inform our understanding of the Shanghan Lun. That's a lot of questions. I'm sorry.
They're all relevant and they're all bundled, and I understand why you put them together. Again, not a historian, but what I understand from other people's research, especially Professor Maji Xing, is that it is a text that was authenticated to be from no more than the beginning of the Song Dynasty, so early or late 900s. It's supposed to have been published posthumously to Tao Hongjing, who is the supposed author. You know, the text uses the same format as the Neijing, where Qibo speaks, and so this is Tao Hongjing speaks. But it was supposedly published by his disciples after his death. The introduction of the text and some of the chapters, like chapter 9, you know, talk about the Lost Tong Yijing, which is a book we have no record of other than a mention in the Book of Han and also in Huang Fumi. So we don't really know what that text was like. Interestingly, you know, even though there are enormous similarities between the formulas of the supposed Tong Yijing, which is actually a text called the Fuxing Jue, in spite of those similarities, the Tong Yijing is not mentioned among the books that inspired Zhang Zongjing in his preface.
I know, it's such a wild thing, isn't it?
Yes, it is. But yeah. You know, so
because Zhang Zongjing in his preface was like, okay, and here's the library that I use to create what I've got. He's suspiciously missing.
It is suspiciously missing, and then at the same time, perhaps it's a matter of being very obvious. You know, I'm thinking, if this was a text that was, you know, in circulation and the learning of herbs from that method was what was prevailing, maybe it was superfluous to mention. I really don't know. So, you know, a lot of controversy exists on whether, you know, is there an ancestor, a common ancestor to the Shanghan Lun and the Fuxing Jue that inspired both of them? Or is it truly that the Fuxing Jue is a pretty literal retransmission of this lost book? Or is it that Tao Hongjing or his disciples later on were inspired by Zhang Zongjing and attempted to reconstruct what was lost? We really don't know. What's more important for us is the relevance and the coherence with our lineage. Because when you examine the formulas and you start taking them apart, analyzing the relationships at work between the herbs, which really represent the relationships between the conformations and the relationships between the yang qi and the fluids, really about the relationship between fire and water circulating together indivisibly, but in various states of condensation or volatilization, then we see that the thinking is very much the same. And for me, there is no shadow of a doubt, regardless of the order of the events, that these two books are inspired by the same understanding of herbal medicine and physiology at large.
That physiology at large, this to me is one of the most interesting things about herbal medicine, is how it gives us all these different ways of looking at human physiology and function.
Yes, absolutely. And so that is where I think that the study of the Fuxing Jue is so instrumental, because it, you know, the way it's constructed is it has formulae ascribed to different quadrants of the Taiji circle, which you can understand through either the six conformation system or the five element system.
So you could like take both the five phases or the six conformations, sort of overlay them simultaneously on this and understand formulations in that way.
Yes. And that is what the text does. And what's interesting about that is as you go around the circle, it proposes various scenarios. You know, each organ has a supplementing and a draining formula, and a minor and a major version of both. And so because of these different scenarios, it's a little bit more organized than, say, the Shanghanlan, where, you know, I always like to think of it as a big board game where you throw the dice and you're in Taiyang, and now you go to, you know, Yangming or Shaoyin, you know. So it's the way the Fuxing Jue is organized is just a little more progressive and organized. And so it allows one to really explore the relationships between the formulae and the real meaning of supplementing by draining and vice versa. Yeah, I find it to be very useful. Also, another point of interest for me and in women's health in particular, you know, I specialize in pregnancy and obstetrics, is that the study of the circular motion really allows one to ponder the various methods through which fire circulates in the body. So, you know, I apprenticed in various currents of the fire spirit school. And so yang is of utmost importance. However, because I treat many pregnant women, I can't use aconite. So I found myself in a very curious position of not being able to give my patients a medicine that I rely on otherwise very much. And so I had to start studying other ways to submerge and circulate yang. And I found also those ways to be not only good interim solutions when one cannot use the aconite, but also wonderful adjuncts to the aconite, because truly what makes an aconite formula safe is what else you're doing in the formula, you know? And for me, it's been really inspirational to study it.
Tell us a little more about taking the fire, submerging it into the water, especially if it needs to go back into the water because someone's weak, or, you know, you've got some really chronic illness, or, you know, you really want to change something. They need that yang qi. That yang qi is unrooted. It's floating. It's not available. And it's not a yang deficiency. It's just a displacement of the yang. You got to put it back. Now, yeah, aconite is the top dog for that. But if you can't use it, all right, so now we're back to talking about physiology, which we were talking about a moment ago. And what you're talking about is a way of looking at how physiology works and using what you can of that to take the yang, return it to its source, and anchor it back down without futsa.
Yes.
Did I get that right?
Yes. It's a tall order, isn't it?
So could you give me an example, like how this would work in clinic? Have you got a case that comes to mind that would demonstrate this?
Gosh, well, many, many, many of them. Maybe I should start with a little introductory background. You know, for this lineage of thought, fire and water are not separate. They're not separate entities with one merging into the other, although for convenience, it's often described that way. But truly in the body, the qi and the yang are indivisible. They're always circulating together.
Yeah, it's like yin and yang. They're not separate things.
Right, exactly.
They're aspects of the same thing.
Exactly. So a big part of submerging yang would be to provide a proper conduit for it, both in terms of fluids and in terms of directionality. So, and that's where Yangming is really instrumental. Yangming can be thought of as a window through which the sun shines and goes to reach the moon etymologically, right? So this is exactly what Yangming represents in our lives. It's the ability to take yang from heaven in the form of, you know, air, food, water, things that affect our heart, whatever. Bring it into the center and transform it into something that's usable. So many of the methods I was alluding to involve restoring the proper functioning of Yangming. And then a close pendant to that is, of course, the proper functioning of Tai Yin, which without which the Yang can't be fully integrated. And when I say Yang, I mean Yang-infused fluids, because they're never separate. So, and you know,
I love that reminder that they're never separate. I think it's so easy to make them separate in our mind.
Yes, because, and we have to a certain degree to kind of take this apart and understand what happens. But I think it really helps once you stop thinking of it separately.
So it would be helpful that when I think of yang, I at the same time think of fluids.
I think so. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And when I think of fluids, I can't not think of yang.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and that's what water is, you know, a little bit of a yang line within two yin lines,
mm-hmm.
and vice versa. So all my pregnant patients, I have to use this principle, and I use it also on the people who do get the aconite, because when you use something that strong in large doses, you have to be able to have proper circulation around the circle to make it safe. So it's not like it's only applicable if you don't use it. So there are various ways to do this. One would be to improve Yangming Tai Yin, as I said, and then another is the Fuxing Zhui really mentions, well, one of the chapters in the Fuxing Zhui concerns 25 archetypal herbs related to the five phases. Each phase has five herbs that are each ascribed in turn to a secondary phase. So you have, for example, the herb that's the fire of fire, or the herb that's the water of fire, et cetera, et cetera. And the fire of fire herb is Xuan Fu Hua.
Fire of fire is Xuan Fu Hua?
Xuan Fu Hua, yeah, inula.
Why do I want to think it would be aconite?
Well, aconite is actually in the wood class because of its acridity. So these herbs are ascribed to phases according to their flavors, because the flavors elicit movements of qi that are ascribed to certain quadrants. Even though the aconite has a downward direction, it is an acrid herb. So, but the Xuan Fu Hua method can be used to descend fire, because, you know, fire desires to go downward when in an ideal situation, like the sun shining down upon the earth. And so I started thinking about, well, wouldn't it be nice if we could use Xuan Fu Hua instead of aconite, and how would that work? Because it's not a warming herb per se. And, you know, I just tucked that in a corner of my mind maybe 15 years ago. And shortly after, I came across some formulas by Sun Simiao, where he was using this principle for the treatment of what seemed to be something similar to preeclampsia, like intense swelling during the end of pregnancy. So, you know, in the predominant percentage of cases, that's a case of water overtaking fire. So a Shaoyin pivot problem with water accumulation. And he was using a variation of Lingui Jugantong without the Guizhi with Xingren and Xuan Fu Hua. And so using that metal element to bring as a conduit to bring down the yang, and not to say that we absolutely never can use aconite in pregnant women. There is a line that tells us we can in case of impending miscarriage, but it is to be avoided at all costs. But so in all the other cases, this is a method we can use, and that I've used many, many times over the years. I mean, pretty much on every pregnant woman that comes to me, there's always been Xuan Fu Hua at some point. And it works.
Yeah. So if I'm following this correctly, the Tang Ye Jing gives us another perspective on looking at open, close, and pivot. It gives us another perspective on using the physiology and the proper functions of physiology to, you know, basically take what's working and use that to fix what's not working. It's not so much that we're using the herb to do it, but we're using herbs to, like, adjust the physiology.
That's right. Yes, the herbs are just guides that are putting us back into proper cosmic timing.
Hello, everyone. Anne Cecil Sturman here. A working knowledge of the eight extraordinary channels from the unbroken oral tradition of acupuncture is valuable beyond words. The power of these channels is tremendous if the practitioner has well integrated diagnostic, theoretical, and practical skill. You'll be familiar with Dumai, the governor channel or the Sea of Yang, the primal reservoir of Yang, which ultimately finances all movement and growth. But this channel also governs the ability to self-determine. The psycho-emotional presentation of your patients can be matched to a classical activation of this channel, clearing impedance in the free flow of Yang Qi to body, mind, and spirit. I'd like to share with you the marvelous potency of the Du channel in a full-length live treatment video from the seminar I taught last year in Melbourne, Australia. It's at annececilsturman.com/sinews2024. Click on the Jump to Free Teaching button or see the link on my Instagram page at Anne Cecil Sturman. Thanks, Michael. Back to you.
Mm-hmm. So I'm super keen these days on how the six Jing sort of map and overlay with the five phases. I've been studying some acupuncture lately, and it does, on the acupuncture side, kind of what we're talking about here right now. That there's a way of adjusting things, and it's using both the confirmations and the phases. It's not one or the other. They're not disconnected. They're actually deeply embedded one within the other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I've studied just enough of the Tang Ye Jing to be dangerous in that I get it that each of the different phases has a different flavor. Like, so in acupuncture school, we learn that, you know, liver is sour, you know, wood and liver is sour, and bitter is the taste of the heart and the fire. And, you know, and we learn all that, and it's in the Nei Jing, and it's, you know, it's very sort of nuts and bolts Chinese medicine. Then you bring the Tang Ye Jing into this. It's a whole different set of correspondences.
Oh, but that's in the Nei Jing too.
Oh, is it?
It is. You know, the whole idea that acrid supplements deliver, you know, there's this whole passage that says, I'm going to paraphrase it horribly. I use those principles all the time, but I'm not good at quoting directly.
I understand, yeah.
You know, that the liver desires to be effused outward. And so we use the acrid flavor to supplement it, but the sour to restrain it. And it's said elsewhere also that the sweet flavor, which is, you know, corresponds to earth, corresponding to a counter control of the wood phase, also relaxes the liver, and so on. The heart desires to be soft, and therefore we use the salty flavor to supplement it and bitter to drain it.
So all the things that we learned in acupuncture school, we're talking about draining the phases. They weren't talking about supplementing it.
Correct.
Is that,
yes.
Is that correct?
Correct. And it's a very partial vision. I don't know why they picked that particular snippet of the Nei Jing to present, but it's by no means the only thing that's presented there.
Hmm. Okay. So that's really helpful. I hadn't considered that we're looking at tonifying or draining a particular phase based on the herbs that we use and the flavors that are involved.
Yes, that's right. And it's really actually about timing. So these little passages that I poorly quoted just a bit ago are preceded each for each organ by a little paragraph that talks about timing. And it's similar to the resolution times that we find at the beginning of the Shanghan Lun, where it mentions that, liver disease tends to become better in the morning, etc. So these are scenarios that only work in the case of a liver constraint, and we know this because the sour flavor gathers inward. So in other words, if you had a problem that was opposite, where the timing of the liver was going too fast, say in the case of a person with a dry Jueyin blood and a premature departure of ministerial fire, in that case, the morning may make that kind of person feel worse because we ride on the impetus of the world to some degree. So, when we look at those mentions of timing, it has to be understood in terms of directionality. Are we going with the direction that the phase desires to attain, or are we going against it? And based on that, make a therapeutic decision.
So the time of day, the dual clock, the Chinese clock, is an important consideration in this.
Yes.
Your treatments could be quite potentiated or dampened down, depending
Absolutely.
On when you're applying them.
Yes, I ask a lot of questions about time to my patient. I really like to know how their energy is throughout the day. So I often ask questions like, tell me about your energy. How do you feel when you wake up? And then what happens? And do you feel tired after eating? A more probing version of the normal questions that we ask in terms of time. Because I find it very telling. The one thing is, though, that it's by no means dogmatic. In other words, having a particular symptom at a particular time could be many different things. And so you kind of have to interpret it.
Yeah, it's very easy to map it onto the clock and go, oh, look, it fits the clock just like this. That must be it. Well, maybe.
Yes, and maybe not.
Maybe not.
Yes, it's so easy to talk yourself logically into or out of many theories in Chinese medicine.
I've adopted a new practice in the past, 3, 4, maybe 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
I've started trying to talk myself out of my diagnosis.
Oh, that's interesting.
So instead of going, oh, here's all the things that match what I think my diagnosis is. See, I got all these things that match up to it. Instead, I'll come up with a diagnosis and then I try to disprove it.
Oh, that's really interesting. So you play your own devil's advocate.
I play my devil's own advocate.
That's really cool.
Well, I don't know if it's cool. It's playful.
Yeah, I like it. You have to prove your point and make sure it stands.
Well, and it helps me prove my point. It's so easy to talk yourself into stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah, so I've just been playing around with that.
It's a lot of
mental brain power. I mean, I get tired. I don't do it all the time. But especially when I think, oh, I really know what this is. It's like, I got this nailed, Michael Max. Watch this. That's when I go, all right, prove it first.
Very cool.
Mr. Smarty Pants.
I'll try it out. That sounds great.
It's just food for thought, you know? I mean, because so many different things could be the answer.
Oh, yes. And you know what's great for that is teaching. Because your students always think of the things you don't think of.
Yeah, how lucky.
It is wonderful.
Yeah, that'll really push your development, won't it?
Yes, it will.
I want to come back for just a moment to descending fire. Because you were talking about that you take it down through the yang ming and the tai yin. So basically like the earth metal axis, which makes sense because, what's in between fire and water? Well, earth and metal. Duh. But the other thing that it makes me think about is digestive function and the whole like Li Dong Yuan earth school and that whole way of thinking. And I'm wondering if this also comes to your mind
when thinking about bringing fire back down and like really looking at the digestive function?
Oh, of course. Yes, the digestive function is paramount for sure. And lung function as well, because, it's another type of digestion. It's the digestion of air. Yes, absolutely.
For those who are listening to this, maybe for the first time and starting to think about Tanya Jing and how all this might work and how it might map, could you run us through like a case or just, you know, a way of thinking, something to help us understand like how you would treat somebody, let's say menstrual pain, because that's a common thing that we treat women for all the time. Thank goodness we have Chinese medicine to do that, right? Take us to a case where we kind of think about it in like common Chinese medicine terms, because that's where most of us started. And then like, could you put the overlay of how you're looking at the dynamic of the five phases and the six confirmations through the lens of the, I'm going to call it the Tang Ye Jing, just as kind of a shorthand.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on that. And also just the fact that the text introduces that as such, to me, it becomes very tiresome and a little counterproductive to keep reminding people that this is in the Fuxing Jui. There's going to be controversy and whatnot, but who are we to not take at face value whoever wrote this? You know?
Well, and for me, what really matters is, does it work in the clinic and can I learn to make it work in the clinic?
Yes.
And if absolutely. I can, I don't care where it comes from.
Mm-hmm. All right. So this is a whole bunch of things at once. So this is probably going to be a hypothetical case inspired by things I've seen. So let's say there's a case of a painful period, as you said, and we know that the person has some clotting in the blood. This person is also a bit thirsty, as they often are. Upon examining their bodies, I find that they have a cold lower abdomen. I look at their tongue and it's pale, puffy, purplish, wet. So this is a case where, you know, you may, I don't really even know what people do in TCM because I had the great luck of starting to apprentice in my lineage while I was in TCM school. So I kind of forgot. Everything.
You kind of bypassed that. You forgot you gave it all back to the teacher after you took the test.
Right. So my recollection is that you would treat this as blood stasis and maybe use, you know, various types of blood mover, maybe at, you know, Taohong Su Wutong or
yeah. Maybe something for the digestion because it sounds like there's some fluid issue.
Yes, something like that. So immediately, because of the clots, we would think Jueyan dryness. But at the same time, we have a puffy tongue.
Mm-hmm. Now, okay, hang on just one second. Jueyan dryness.
Oh, yes. That's another one.
You're talking code here.
Oh, sorry. Okay. So Jueyan being ascribed to the liver and the wood and the realm of blood. And for us, what
Jueyan is kind of a shorthand for blood.
It really is. And for us, you know, what we term Jueyan dryness would correspond to what TCM would call yin deficiency in terms of symptomology. Except for us, you know, yin deficiency has a really different meaning. It's more not a deficiency of fluids or that it encompasses that, but mostly it's the failure of yin to attract yang, which is a different idea, although close but different idea from Jueyan dryness, which is that just deficiency of fluids. So when there is Jueyan dryness, we surmise two things in general. Often there can be a failure of the Xiaoyin pivot to work. So in cases where you see, for example, cold and concurrent fluid accumulation at the same time as you have signs of dry blood, like the clotting, then you would consider needing to augment the function of the Xiaoyin pivot with some aconite, for example.
Because, again, we're talking heart and kidney here.
Yes.
And yes. Bringing that fire that should be in the kidney back down.
Yes. Correct. And that would in turn allow the proper production of the wood phase in the blood. There's another consideration, which is that diametrically opposed to Zhuiyin on the circle, we have Yangming. And so Yangming, we know the stomach is the gate of fluids. So we have to think again of the of Yang and fluids being one together, indivisible. And so part of the problem is also reestablishing fluid physiology. So usually we would involve some kind of herb that has an action on metal, both in a descending kind of way and also in a moistening kind of way. So often perhaps Maimendong or Baihe or, you know, in other cases, Banxia or Tianhuafen. These are often found in Zhuiyin formulas. So the way I might approach this would be to use a formula that has a strong Shaoyin component, at the same time a little bit of moistening and descending in the Yangming realm, and at the same time, perhaps depending on the case, either an herb that encourages the fluidity and movement of blood on the eastern realm, in the eastern realm, or if there is, as sometimes it happens, there is a little bit of a problem with ministerial fire losing its root because the blood is dry, then I would need to address that as well. For example, say I were to use Guizhou Fulingwan, I very, very often do a Guizhou Fulingwan Zhen Wutong combination.
And right.
Because there's a lot of overlap between those two formulas, and you can really get a lot further in most cases with that.
That's a great idea.
It works.
I'm thinking from the TCM point of view, this dry Zhuiyin, it's blood stasis, you know, in essence. Blood's a little dried out, stagnated. We'd think about using blood movers and maybe tonifying the blood and that kind of thing. Just, again, basic TCM. But that's going like right at the formed thing, the blood stasis. That's going right at the formed thing. And what I hear you talking about, this seems so elegant because you're not so much going directly at it, although you did mention a blood herb that has to do with the Eastern influence. So I'm thinking, okay, all right, you're going to go at it from that direction and very targeted, may I add. But the thing that's amazing about this to me as I'm thinking about it is you really are looking at moving that physiology in such a way that the problem should take care of itself.
Yes, that's true. You're looking at the precursors to the problem.
You're looking at the precursors. You're not just going at the formed thing. You're going to the things that contribute to it.
Yes, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's a really good way to think about it.
How do you keep from getting confused? I mean, this just seems like a lot to keep in your mind in terms of what's doing what to what. How do you orient yourself?
Oh, it's very easy. It's super logical because I think it comes down to really understanding the circle and the circulation of fire and water around it. And then everything makes sense. It's actually really, very comforting to be able to come back to that template to understand just about everything under the sun. How do I keep it from getting confusing? When I'm confused, what I like to do is draw a circle and put the patient's symptoms around it and kind of ascribe certain things to certain situations. And then I put arrows indicating what needs to be done about it. And then I end up with a picture with a movement, different movements around the circle. And then I choose herbs that correspond to the movements that are desired. And that usually ends up being the skeleton of a formula that, you know, then echoes in my brain with some Shenghan Zabinglun formula or the other. And then then comes therapeutic freedom. Because even though you may remember a formula, you can tailor it. Once you understand on that level everything that happens around the circle and how the herbal flavors relate to it, you start understanding why each herb is in a formula, and it becomes very precise and at the same time extremely easy.
Mm-hmm. I'm just imagining here, and we're going to get into it a little bit more in a moment. I love the idea of you draw the circle, you know what the different aspects of the circle mean, you map the symptomology, maybe even map some of the proper physiology. Well, the circle is proper physiology, so we'll just leave that to the side. So you're mapping the issues onto the circle so you can see where things are, and then you can decide, all right, how am I going to deal with those? That by itself could give rise to a formula. And as you just pointed out, and I was just thinking, you could take any formula then, and if you want to understand it from this perspective, you just put it on the map.
Absolutely.
And it'll tell you what it does.
That is so true. And I always tell my students, don't even look at the line. I mean, not to say you shouldn't study it. Of course, you should study it at some point. But what's really helpful in terms of understanding formulas is you draw a circle, you put all the ingredients around the circle with arrows corresponding to their directionality, and you will see very clearly what a formula is trying to accomplish, regardless of what the line says, which, as we know, you know, different lines say different things about the same formula. And they're not all necessarily incompatible, but I think that it really, really helps to understand formulas that way.
It sounds like the original infographic.
Yes, that's it. Yeah, and the pulse is like that too. The pulse could be understood to be a circular representation of physiology.
Okay. So Shaoyin is the center of this. It all spins around the Shaoyin.
Yeah.
The fire. It all spins around the fire. Because Shaoyin has to do with fire.
Yes, but it's fire within water, right?
Well, the kidney's fire within water, but the heart is fire and fire.
Okay, yes. So this is where it gets really hairy sometimes to superimpose the five and the six. And also a point that is of interest for me, where the Fuxing Jue, for example, describes heart pathology in a way that's completely different from Shaoyin pathology as we know it from the Shanghan Zabinglun. If we think of fire and water being indivisible, just in various states of condensation or volatility, and we think of the Li trigram, for the fire trigram, being one yin line within two yang lines and vice versa for the water trigram, we can see that this is evident. So in a way, yes, Shaoyin, yes, it's the heart is all about that, the yang, but it's, you can't leave the water out of it. And so when we see those relationships of described by the flavors in the Suwen and in the Fuxing Jue, the heart desires to be soft, therefore use the salty flavor to supplement it. You can think of the salty flavor being an agent of volatilization. It also drains the kidney. You can think of the salt, you know, if you put it on ice, it helps it melt, or it helps the boiling point of water become lower. So it helps steam things upward. And by that steaming, that is exactly what qi is, which is yang diffracted like a rainbow within water. So fire still has water within it.
Yeah, I think this is one of the fascinating things for me about the Shaoyin. And it took me a long time to figure this out, that it's like, so why do so many formulas that treat the Shaoyin have futsa in it? If there's an issue with the Shaoyin, especially kidney Shaoyin, many of the formulas that treat it have futsa, because again, we're looking at, oh, there's a lack of fire, or maybe that fire is displaced. But the reason the futsa's in there is because it's supposed to be warm and it's not warm enough.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so we've got the fire within the water.
Right. So that's exactly it. It just submerges the fire within the water or brings more of an energized state in the water. And that's where its acridity comes into play too, because it penetrates through.
In recent years, the Siam acupuncture style has generated significant interest and a loyal and growing following. In the Siam approach, a precise diagnosis leads to a four-needle treatment to address the five element and six qi imbalances in the body. The four needles target the controlling and generating cycles. It's common using this method for the needle sensation to be stronger than in many other styles. Thus, the choice of needle becomes important. The Unico brand of needles lends itself to both strong and gentle techniques. These superior needles are made of uncoated Japanese surgical stainless steel and feature the best guide tube on the market with its unique beveled edge. Additionally, Unico needles have a tensile property that helps with freehanding needles into Jingwell points and allows you to more easily feel the arrival of qi. Blue Poppy is the exclusive importer and distributor of Unico needles. Use the code QI2024 to save 10% off Unico needles at www.bluepoppy.com. You'll be glad you did. Penetrates through the water. And again, and then that acridity helps promote the cycle onto the wood face.
That's correct.
So it's not enough just to put something somewhere. You want to put it there in a way that it's then going to do whatever proper physiological transformation it has to do next.
Yes, absolutely. That's the idea. You just want to keep things moving around the circle for sure.
Mm-hmm. I want to try to understand this because you were talking about we've got the pivot of the Shaoyin. That's in the center. And then everything moves around that.
In the center.
Or did I not understand that correctly?
Oh, gosh. No, you did. Yeah, there's so many different ways to understand it spatially. That's why I was pondering, because there's so many ways to think of it. You can think of it as the center because of, you know, the heart and what the Shuowenjidze tells us about the heart being the center of human experience and the place and truly that is the Shaoyin function. You know, after you receive nourishment from heavens via Yangming and Tai Yin, it gets integrated in Shaoyin, and the same goes for our experiences. They get processed in the heart and then they result in an action in the East, whatever that is, a reaction. And so that's one way to think of it in the center. And then there's also another way to think of it, which is, you know, north or and south, or I think better put, the zenith and the nadir of the sun. So we think about, well, this kind of goes back to cosmology. When we look at the way the Fuxing Jue presents south and north formulas. So in the south, you have the constellation of the red bird. And in the north, corresponding to Shaoyin, you have the constellation of the dark warrior. And the way, they're actually not really constellations. We erroneously call them constellations. They're actually quadrants composed each of seven constellations in the sky. And the way those positions were determined in ancient astronomy was by an observation of where the full moon would rise in relation to the background of the sky. And from that position, wherever the moon rises in the west, so say it's the winter, and the moon would actually rise in the quadrant of the red bird, diametrically opposed would be the sun, because at the time of the full moon, the sun and the moon are more or less aligned with the earth in between. Not completely, otherwise it would be an eclipse, of course. But you can infer that polar relationship between the two. So another way to understand Shaoyin for me would be to think of it as these polar extremes that are always in relationship with each other and that are completely indivisible and define each other in some way. And likewise with the idea of the zenith, saying like the sun at noon is high above our heads and at midnight is in the nadir way below our feet. It describes that same idea of yang reaching the yin of the moon. Yes, so I think in nature, there's a very real experiential idea of standing on the earth and receiving sun from above and integrating that energy. That's the quintessential Shaoyin physiology, I think. Mm-hmm. I think I got lost in your question, though.
Well, it was a question that was meant to open up and look at different ways of how to understand this Shaoyin pivot, understand what's going on, because it seems so very important and very central in so many ways. And so, yes, there's that cosmological aspect. If your mind goes toward that kind of thing, you can look at that and you can really, I mean, you can plug a lot of things into a cosmological perspective, or you could take a, you know, much more, I'm going to call it a narrower focused perspective, which is looking at the physiology within the body.
Yeah.
Of course, a reflection of the cosmological, but maybe a little easier to wrap our minds around. Mm-hmm. And then I want to take this even a little bit further in. Let me just run this by you. So the heart is sovereign fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the heart shares that sovereign fire with the kidney. That's the Shaoyin fire. Is it fair to say that the kidney also receives, holds, and uses sovereign fire?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a fair statement. So. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. Do you?
Well, I've just been chewing on this kind of stuff again. I've been studying some acupuncture lately that's been making me think about these kinds of things. I mean, I know about that there's kidney fire and it's like connected to the Mingmen, and actually, when I think about my earlier days of like study and practice, be like kidney fire, and it's just like it never would really stick all the way in, because I'm thinking it's kidney, it's wet, it's cold, it's water, blah 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 blah. But it's only later when I started thinking not so much about organ, but thinking about Liu Jing, right, six confirmation, where I start to go, oh,
exactly. Same year.
There's this other thing going on here. I see it now. But it's like I have to change my mental focus from here's one organ along the five phases that say, in this case, the kidney, a yin organ. That's going to give you a particular perspective. When you put that together with the sixth confirmation and then you see what it shares with the heart, at least for me, now the Mingmen makes a whole lot more sense.
Absolutely. Yes.
Like, oh, that's what that is.
Absolutely.
It's that fire.
Yeah. Absolutely. And also, you know, I find that even within each organ, it's just the same way, actually, that sort of mimics what the Fuxing Zhui describes with the 25 herbal archetypes, which are generally ascribed to one phase. But then within that category, you have subdivisions of kind of secondary tropisms for the herbs. So I think of the organs in that way, too. For example, you know, the heart, yes, the heart is Shaoyin and it receives heaven's generosity, but it also has an impulse and an Eastern movement. And that's the ministerial fire. So actually, when you look at
wait a minute, the heart has ministerial fire?
Well, it generates ministerial fire.
It generates ministerial fire.
Each beat is ministerial fire departing from Shaoyin in Zhuiyin. You know, that's the beginning of the wood phase, like departing from Shaoyin, ministerial fire starts, right? And so each heart...
I totally don't understand how that works.
Okay.
How does each heartbeat generate ministerial fire?
Well, no, not that it generates, probably wasn't the right word, but it is a generation of ministerial fire, meaning that each, you know, what's the function of ministerial fire is to bring the emperor fire to the outer reaches of the body, right? So when the heart beats, it creates movement that sends fluids, blood, all through the body. And so as such, you know, this is a way to think of Shaoyin heart generating the wood phase and the ministerial fire so that it can reach everywhere. And when you look at chest obstruction formulas in the Jingui Yaowei, and you analyze their composition, you can see that there's always sort of a symmetrical construction with, on the one hand, support bringing the yang in on the western quadrant through metal or tai-yin or whatever the case may be. And on the other hand, there's always a little bit of something to help the departure of ministerial fire from the heart, to help the heartbeat. And that's visible in many different types of formulas. For example, you know, whether it's something like Jushushi by Guizhutong, or whether it is something that uses, you know, like Fuling Xingren as a base, there's always an element of, we are going to free Shaoyin of whatever is fettering it, so that then the heartbeat can depart, so we can live the next day. And that goes for other organs too. For example, if you think of the lung desires to contract according to the Neijing. But yet we also use a lot of acrid herbs in the treatment of the lung,
because we also want it to diffuse outward at the same time.
Exactly.
All movements that go in at some point have to go out. If you use something too astringent, then all right, you may get the ingoing working really well, but you still need it to go out at some point.
Mm-hmm, exactly. And same with the kidneys. I mean, you can think, I mean, this happens on a cellular level. You can think of energy and fluids exiting and entering all the time. So that's how you start being able to do weird things, like using Guizhutong for an ovulation or, you know.
Let's talk about that in just a second.
Yeah.
We're gonna move to that. Guizhutong for ovulation.
Oh God. Yeah.
Okay. That'll be fun.
It's a weird
but
one.
Before we do, you just said something about the heart creating the ministerial fire of the wood.
Mm-hmm.
That goes backwards in my mind on the five phases. So how do you get there?
Okay. I think I have to understand first how that goes backwards.
Oh, because when I think of the five phases, fire generates earth. Fire does not generate wood. Wood generates fire.
Oh. We're not in that model. We're in six confirmations.
Okay, so we're not talking the heart as a fire organ in the five phases. We're talking the heart as a Shaoyin.
Yes.
Organ.
Yes, exactly. Sorry if that wasn't clear.
The Shaoyin gives rise to
the Zhuiyin,
which is what wood, liver, blood is. Okay, got it.
Like
now
that.
I see it. Okay.
And actually that's something that I almost touched on earlier, where, you know, the Fuxing Zhui talks about heart pathology in a very different way. You know, first of all, it's a book that's kind of focused on epidemic disease. So a lot of
Should all be reading that right now.
Oh, yes, we should. the heart pathology has a lot to do with things that we would term in modern lingo, like pericarditis, or, you know, just the effects of febrile disease on the heart. But the way that the pathologies are described are very much about rescuing the south position with the bitter flavor to precipitate fire downward. That's a very different sort of understanding than talking about the heart as a Shaoyin organ. So that's actually a major point of difference.
Again, I'm thinking of the way that you were talking about drawing the circle, making the map, putting different things on the map. Where do they fit? And now we look at how do we want to move things in such a way that these things will take care of themselves.
Yes.
Thank you for the clarification. It's super helpful. I now see that how the Shaoyin generates the Zhuiyin, and thus the sovereign fire generates the ministerial fire.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry I didn't explain it.
You explained it really well. I understand it right now, and I'm hoping that the listeners do as well. Again, I was thinking about five phase and organ with a yin-yang, you know, split, which will give you one particular view.
Mm-hmm,
but you were talking about something different here, and now I got it.
Yes, and I'm always partial to six confirmations. So I tend to think a lot in six confirmations rather than organs. So that's where my mind went.
I think that's why I've been enjoying this conversation with you so much today, because the past couple of years, I've also been thinking more in six confirmations.
Mm-hmm.
And it dramatically changes how the world looks.
It does.
And dramatically changes what we can do with our particular methods.
Absolutely. It's endlessly fascinating.
Yes. So would it be fair to say that this, I'm using air quotes here, Tang Ye Jing thinking, just I'm using that as a code word, okay?
Yes, code word, got it.
Is actually a way of mapping and understanding the six confirmations in a way that's not dissimilar from how we all learned the five phases in school. It's just that we're now looking at confirmations in a different way, and not that layer cake that they taught us about, you know, Shang Han Lun, where it starts in Taiyang and, you know, progresses in a certain way. We're not looking at a layer cake. We're looking at a circle, or maybe even a torus.
Okay. Yes, absolutely. And I think that the circle is also, of course, present in the Shang Han Zanbing Lun. So the order that the layered cake you're referring to is the pathological order of invasion of the confirmations. And that corresponds more, I think, to a representation of the human being standing upright on the earth, like, or, you know, where we get invaded from the utmost yang, and then down it goes to the deeper recesses of the body. Or if you think of a tree, it works, that analogy works even better because the roots are inside the earth, you know, and reaching down to water. So if you insert a tree where the human is and think of the pathological order of invasion of the confirmations, I find that very helpful. But we also know that the circle is present because when we look at the beginning of the Shang Han Lun at the resolution times, if you map them on a circle, it will give you that circular motion going, you know, the impulse of life starting at the time of midnight, the primordial seed, and then going through Zhuayin, Xiaoyang, Taiyang, Yangming, Taiyin, and back down to Xiaoyin. We know that that thinking was prevalent at the time of Zhang Zongjing because there's other books that mention it. For example, the classic of childbirth from Ma Wangdui describes the development of the fetus along the same circle of the confirmations. So I think there's like what happens in nature, like timing, because really it's a medicine of time. It's about when do we manifest outward expansion and volatilization, and when do we manifest contraction, and how do we live the next day? It's about the continuation of life through cosmic breathing, really. And when we talk about damage by cold, it's something that either comes from heavenly influences from the outside in, so penetrating inward from Taiyang on, or that injury was allowed to be perpetrated by a north type problem within the body, so not enough yang, not enough fire to reach the outer regions of the body and prevent external injury.
Internal and external. It also seems to me that the Shang Han Lun is talking about disease processes, but what we've been talking about today is proper physiology.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, we can look at them both ways, and they're both useful lenses to put on a situation.
Yeah, and they're interdependent too. Because
they're interdependent, obviously.
Yeah.
But you know, one of the beauties for me about Chinese medicine is how so often we can use what's proper to take care of what's not well.
Mm. Oh, I really like how you put that. That feels very healing on so many different levels, because I think That's a whole code of conduct, isn't it?
Is it?
I think so. What's the
code of conduct you're referring to?
Well, I'm thinking about right action. And so what you, I know you meant about physiology, but I'm thinking about the state of the world and also just one's personal life. And it's an interesting idea to me to use what is proper to rectify what is not.
Yes. Yes. Oh my goodness. That's so good.
That is so good. You found it.
Well, we found it. This is why Chinese medicine was taught in dialogue. Because it's in conversation that we discover things.
When
we're just banging around in our own mind, it's very hard to get new information. But in dialogue, holy smokes.
That's true. You must get a lot of that too.
Well, we do it every day with our patients, right?
It's so true. I learned so much from my patients.
All the time.
Every time. Yes, it's so
yeah,
great.
Pretty much every time.
I should be paying them.
Well,
maybe not.
Sometimes I think I should. Sometimes I think I should. But yeah. I still try to hold up my own end of the bargain there.
Yeah.
This has been a lovely conversation. I think this is probably a good place to leave it, although you did kind of tease us with Gui Zhitang for ovulation.
Oh.
I'm curious. Could you write something up? Would you have something written up about that we could just put on the show notes page and people could download it and read it? If they were interested in that kind of thing?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So if you want to know about using Gui Zhitang for ovulation, head over to the show notes page and we'll have a file for there that you can download that Genevieve has written about that. And we can put your website on there and all that other stuff in case people need to talk to you.
Okay, sure. And I just want to say that is a very unusual case. In 90%+ of cases, usually ovulation problems have some element at least of a Shaoyin problem and require aconite in large doses. But this is just a very specialty sort of problem that has to do with a wood problem of motion outward and the release of the egg. And then
great. So yeah. that's exactly why I want this, because it's a little bit different, but more importantly, it describes the thing that we've been talking about and talking around, which is how the six conformations unfold into each other and how we need to be attentive to those movements and supportive of those movements. So it'll be great. It's an emblematic case for what we're talking about, learning how to perceive in this way.
That is true. I think that learning exceptions are a good way to learn the rule.
Genevieve, I have thoroughly enjoyed our time together today. I've learned so much. Thanks so
Likewise.
Much for sitting down today with me.
Oh, thank you for inviting me, Michael. It's lovely to meet you.
One of the things I appreciate about Chinese medicine is the way it's constantly asking me to widen my perspective. It asks us to be limber in our thought and to approach our work with a flexible spirit, open heart, and sharp mind. I have another podcast coming up in the near future on the Tang Ye Jing and the Fuxing Zhe.
Thanks as always for listening. If you liked this conversation, if you learned something new or found a moment of inspired insight, share the episode with your friends. If you want to support Geological, there's just one way to do that. It's by going to the website and becoming a member or leaving a one-time contribution today. Well, folks, that's it for today. Join us again next Tuesday for another conversation that connects up the voices of our community.